Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And on The Stack, we talk about a bunch of comics that have come out this week. So let's get into it with no delay, kicking it off with
Talking Comics.
Talking Comics.
No delay, never delayed. We don't ever take the time. We don't even talk to each other. We just come in cold, don't even say each other's names, and we just start talking comics. I don't even know these guys'
Absolute
home
Flash. Life.
Absolute Flash. Absolutely, we're going to talk about that, and we're going to review it because that's what we do on this show with no delay. Absolute Flash number 10 from DC Comics, written by Jeff Lemire, art by Nick Robles. In this issue, Wally West finally makes his way into Fort Fox as the Rogues are hot behind him. He's been teaming up with them, and we get some revelations about the ongoing mysteries in this series. I really have been liking this more and more every issue. Personally, I think it started as a little bit of a slow burn, but a lot of that was building the ground that it needed to get to this point where things are really starting to heat up here. I like the art. I like the writing. I'm very much all in on this title. No pun on the DC all in.
Yeah. First off, cool cover. I really love the colors in this. Really, some great use of red.
Love
the
red.
Love the panel designs. Big action, big panels. Grodd is still not a factor, which is kind of freaking me out in the back of my mind as these stories are
Friendly
happening.
Grodd.
Yeah,
but
I don't buy it.
He's the helpful little monkey.
I don't buy it. I don't buy it.
Back.
Yeah, I don't buy it at all. That's really going to blow up in their face. But this is great. This is enjoyable. I don't normally like Flash. I think this started really strong, like the first two issues, then got a little weird, but now it's back.
Do you feel like, Pete, when you encounter someone with a villain's name, it makes you like not trust them, even though it's just like, hi, yes, my name is James Doom.
Oh, my God.
Like, get out of here. Justin. He's like, I'm just a mild-mannered
And one
doctor.
Of your best friends in college was named Hitler, right, if I remember correctly.
That is not correct. That was one of your friends. You went to Cornell. I think that the, when my work first got Cobra Insurance, they had to sit me down because I was like, I don't trust this at all. And they're like, Pete, no, this is real. You gotta take this insurance, and I was like, "Hell,
it's great
no,
that you
I'm not
literally do
what
you do walk the walk, not just talk."
What would
the
you
talk.
Feel though if you like if you had been working in California and it was Cobra LA or Cobra La, if you will?
Cobra La 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 La. No, I wouldn't fall for it.
You just did. You just did.
You just did. You couldn't help yourself. My dermatologist when I was much younger was named Dr. Terrible, and I still trusted him fine.
Wow.
That's a true story. His name was Dr. Michael Terrible.
But was he or was he not?
We've great had dermatologist. This conversation before. We've had this I asked, times. Is it pronounced Terrible? And you said, no, it was terrible, and you had a conversation about that. What do you think about Absolute Flash, Justin?
Great follow-up question. Again, no delays here. He did end up finding a mole that he removed from my body. For this comic book,
your life?
Yeah, and now, actually, I do have a follow-up question here. Since you grew up upstate, are we talking about a mole like a piece of skin, or are we talking like he actually removed the animal, a mole, from your body?
Yeah, no, I had a mole running through my GI tract, and he did remove it.
You know, it's an upstate New York.
I described the accident that led to a mole being in my body, but
we know
it's too graphic.
You drank well water.
I did drink well water, but that doesn't necessarily mean
where do
I
moles
had
live? Well water.
Wells.
Yeah. Wells.
Yep.
So Absolute Flash, you know, this comic, I knocked it a little bit as being sort of not my favorite coming out of the gate. And I've identified why I think this is the most, like, just traditional superhero fair type comic in the Absolute universe. But I actually think they're really delivering, though, now. It's like, I think the story has been a really nicely paced, slow build. And in this issue in particular, we get some big emotional moments, big Flash style, Flash continuity payoffs that really worked here, even though I maybe could have predicted this character doing the thing that happens, while still being surprised by a character like Grodd, the way the rogues are being handled, all these things. This is a great comic. The Absolute Universe continues to sort of push out the tent poles to make to carve out a larger and larger area of them just taking over, like, how comic book storytelling goes, where it's like, hey, why don't we just go hard all the time? And that's what they're doing here.
Well, and one other thing that I'll laud in this book, on the easy to predict part, I think they've been very clear that, like, there's a whole time loop thing going on with this book.
Yeah.
But it's not something that they're doing in one issue or even two issues, but they're doing it in at least 12 issues at this point. So DC giving them the room and the breadth of storytelling to be able to slowly build up these things that I do think are going to be absolutely devastating when they finally
come.
In a flash, it's going to be devastating, if you will.
Got to give them room to run.
Yeah, exactly. Not be stuck in Le Mer, if you will.
Oh, wow. Right?
The sea?
No, not Le Mer, Le Mire, like the mire, like the muck.
Ah, interesting. Anyway, I think you'll understand why I made that mistake.
Well, I think with no delay, we should move to our next title, which is Black Panther Intergalactic, number one from Marvel, written by Victor Laval, art by Stefano Nessi. Pete, go ahead and get the Beastie Boys out of your system, and then we can talk about the book.
Intergalactic Planetary. Thank you.
Great. This is spinning off of the Imperial crossover. So far, we've really liked the spinoffs, even though we didn't love the event or we were mixed on the event. Planet She-Hulk, great. Nova Centurions, great. Now we're getting a very different story of Black Panther and Wakanda in space. What you guys think about this one? Are we 3-4-3?
Yeah, I thought this was enjoyable. There's some kind of jumping around here from different worlds, different times. I'm trying to kind of figure out all that is happening, but I love the art. I feel like this got really cool action, interesting story. I'm excited to see what's next.
I like the moves here. There's so much exposition in this first issue that it feels like such a big, dense first bite out of the apple, when what I really want is just to, like, hey, let's get just a sense of a couple of these characters before we get into so much plot things. But the plot is interesting, like, and I especially like where this issue ends. But this is, it's just feeling a little bit of that hangover from the larger Imperial event that was, like, too much all at once, when there could have been a better story without having to get so bureaucratic. And there is a lot of that here as well.
There are, like you guys are saying, a lot of neat plot points throughout here. Black Panther is lost in some strange land, and he is exploring that. We get to see some cool stuff there, including familiar characters in different ways. Shuri is trying to track him down and find out where he is. My issue here is weirdly the same issue that we had with Ultimate Black Panther, which Ultimate Black Panther felt like a Black Panther story. This does not feel like a Black Panther story that in any way needs to take place in space with an intergalactic empire. It's the sort of thing that could happen in Wakanda, could happen on Earth, could happen anywhere else. So I don't know. I was surprised by that, because given the title, we see planets on the cover, we see ships and explosions. Like you're saying, it's the setup of the whole cosmos is unstable at this point. So I don't know why we didn't get any of that instead of mostly taking place in a pocket universe off of one room on one planet, you know? But
yeah. Well, and also
you got to build towards it.
Because when I looked at this cover and I read the title, I was like, oh, it's really interesting, like a Black Panther and the Nation of Wakanda, which was about secrecy and remaining in its sort of particular place for all of its history. And now they're doing the opposite. They're literally an expanded intergalactic empire. Like, that's the opposite. I wonder if that's what this is about. And it's actually not about that at all. It is going back into a very contained story area, and I wish they would. That feels like such a fertile area to talk about.
Well, and that, I believe it was Ta-Nehisi Coates' run, which did the intergalactic empire, yes, of Wakanda, and it's tough to match up to that. Like, there's nothing, yeah, against the team, but, like, that's, like, sort of the top tier in terms of heady storytelling. So I understand backing off and going in the other direction, but I guess we'll have to see how this goes.
Yeah, we'll see.
Next up, G.I. Joe number 16 from Skybound and Image Comics, Joe, written by Joshua Williamson, art by Tom Riley. We're continuing the Dreadnought War as Duke and Cobra Commander have been taken hostage by a bunch of hillbillies. And in this issue, the other Joes show up. I know that I don't need to say Dreadnoughts twice in the same sentence.
Okay.
In any case, the Joes show up to save them, but there's some more twists and turns and big fights go on here. Pete, take it away.
Yeah, this is awesome.
If I may jump in real quick, because I actually love this. This was an issue that I thought really worked so hard. It wasn't about just name-checking characters. Mm-hmm. It was like, you really, from the jump, you're like, Duke stuck. The Duke Cobra Commander thing of where Duke's like, hey, I just want to question this guy. He's the villain I've been trying to track down for a while. And they're like, the Dreadnoughts are like, we're crazy. This one panel in the middle of the book is like, one of them holding up a chainsaw saying, we only care about money and parties. And I was like,
and
sick,
then
dude,
grape
same.
Soda. Grape soda. Don't forget that. I mean,
and
that's
grape
in
soda
there.
Is later added. That's, yeah. I was like, the grape soda, are you doing Insane Clown Posse? Because it seems like that's what they are doing here. It's like a Faygo,
I think they just love
parallel.
I think
isn't
if you're going to.
Is Faygo grape soda?
No, but I think it's the grape soda Faygo is, I think they're taking the same place. It's like a little
fair enough
analogy. But I love the way that this is all played. This is one of the most successful issues that has woven in Transformers, Energon, G.I. Joe, where it didn't feel like, I didn't feel the sweat of the work on that. It just felt like a fun story where they're fighting these like redneck maniacs. And maybe I just identify with being like,
they're called Dreadnoughts.
Dreadnoughts.
Redneck maniac is almost saying Dreadnoughts.
Right, you gotta say Dreadnought.
But also, you
say,
you know, they
Dreadnought is a weird word. It's not dread. It should be Dreadnoughts.
I agree.
Anyways, they call them
why are they Dreadnoughts?
This is very serious. Don't make jokes about this.
Yeah, thank
why
you.
Why are they Dreadnoughts? What does that mean?
I think that
you actually, I think you missed when we were talking about the last issue, Justin. I had some questions about, what is he called? Road Pig? Is that?
Yep. Yep.
Road Pig, the fact that he lives in a house most of the time. Mm-hmm. Like, he's just in that house and he doesn't leave that house.
He doesn't love the road. He doesn't love the road or pigs.
He's a house pig.
Yeah, you guys are having
Is House
fun.
Pig another Dreadnought?
If I could, please, in the...
What was your Dreadnought name? Because, Pete, you were Roadhead, right? And Alex, you were... you were Oil
Roadhead.
Leak.
That's confusing.
Oil Leak.
Oh, guys, let's see you guys riding in the car together.
They did
Who's
make...
driving?
They did make the joke in the comic calling them Rednecks when they were talking about the Dreadnought.
Yes, shouts.
Yeah. But, yeah, this was a blast. This idea that Alex was talking about before, or maybe it was Justin, it's all a fog right now.
We're all the same to him.
The having kind of Duke and Cobra Commander and this kind of thing of like, hey, you know, I want to try to question this guy. I don't want to murder him, even though he is the bad guy. It's cool. It's a great kind of a problem for Duke to be in. I think it's a great use of Duke for this. I also think that, like, you know, this is great kind of Cobra Commander of him always kind of slipping
yes.
away and kind of I think this is well-used character work here. And I just think the action's great. And, yeah, it's hard because they're like, why don't you want to join the Dreadnoughts? We're all about partying and grape soda. And it's hard
and
to
money.
Argue with that.
Yeah. Pete, you live in the country. You could be a Dreadnought.
You could be Dreadnought number one. Dreadnought commander, if you will. This arc is an absolute blast. I love it.
Yeah,
the one other thing that I wanted to mention is Tom Riley's art and panel layouts are out of control. This issue in particular.
Yes.
There are pages that have like 30 different panels all on an angle showing different fights that are going on, and you can actually follow them. And a lot of that is helped by Jordi Belair's colors, which are great as always. So this is a blast.
You get a one page back matter on Road Pig showing his design for the road pig guys out there.
Yeah, Road Pig just wanted to make his codpiece for it. Yeah.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Now it's time to turn from one fight to another with the first of our All Fight Month titles this week. We've got Cyborg versus Swamp Thing as part of DC KO. This is in Titans number 30 from DC Comics, written by John Layman, art by Pete Woods. And just to mention, you do actually have to read these in a specific order, even though they don't have the numbers on the cover, which I find a little annoying
I read these out of order.
Yes. But the thing is that beyond Cyborg and Swamp Thing fighting this issue, you're also getting stuff with the Titans and the ongoing story. And through all the All Fight Month stories, there's a thing going where Booster Gold has revealed himself to be Darkseid and has taken down the Quantum Quorum, which is a bunch of time travelers who are trying to keep the DC KO tournament on track, and that's going terribly wrong. Generally, I think we've liked these Fight Month stories so far. How'd you feel about the Titans one?
Yeah, this is fun. Continues to be a blast for me. I'm having a great time with this. This was cool. I thought that, like, Swamp Thing kind of tapping out and kind of being like, hey,
he totally Obi-Wan.
Yeah, he kind of John Cena'd, you know. He tapped out and said, go get him, kid. I'm done. So interesting. I felt like I had Swamp Thing winning in my bracket, but I thought it was cool the way Swamp Thing was like, hey, I'm a little bit more evolved and above all this fighting. So, like, you know, if you want to do this, you know, you got my blessing.
I mean, it makes a lot of sense. Swamp Thing, never a real hand-to-hand guy when it comes to fighting.
But
slaps only on Goldeneye. You know what I mean? He's more of a spores leaking slowly throughout the facility kind of guy. And it feels like one of the themes I would track through all of these is maybe more like physical fighting. It's like power of like moving shit. Like Aquaman winning is going to be all about just how much he can do. Cyborg gets the big mech suit. So like maybe that's what we're getting at, is like a villain that can just be like, here's how many lasers I can make. These two people, I'm like, ooh, I would never write this down as to a fight I wanted to see, but it was interesting to see them be so different and find a way to confront each other. And the Swamp Thing bow, he's sort of like, yeah, I got other stuff to do.
Yeah.
Anyway.
This was my least favorite of the All Fight Month titles so far, including the one that we're about to talk about as well.
Oh, you did like Plant versus Laptop?
No.
Weird.
I mean, I don't know.
Laptop won.
Part of it was
Laptop
that
always
this was
wins in my
just an
life.
Issue of Titans. Like, the thing that I've really been enjoying is the focus from the other issues here, where it's literally just this fight. Like, the entire issue is just this fight. This one jumped around like a regular issue, and I don't have a problem with what's going on with the other Titans or anything like that, but it took away a little bit of the specialness of this, and maybe part of that is, there's not much of a way that Cyborg should be able to beat Swamp Thing, who is the entire Earth. So they had to, this is the one where it sort of felt like you could feel the gears turning a little bit to get the character where he needed to be. No pun on Cyborg.
And honestly, I would have liked to see the other Titan stuff more. If they treated this issue as like a 3-splash page fight between these two, and that would have been a cool arty way to do it. And then we just get Titans trying to keep the Earth going as it slowly turns into Apocalypse, which is a great story. Mm-hmm. I'm dying to see more of that. That would have been more my preference, I think.
Speaking of Titans,
the Mortal Thor number 5.
Oh, dang Marvel, it, I blew it.
Written by Al Ewing, what, art by Pascal. What were you talking about?
I thought Titans was next, but we were talking about Titans. I blew it.
Wait, I'm sorry. Were you queuing up?
He thought it was Swamp Thing versus Cyborg, yeah. And that Titans was another comic.
The next one.
And I will say, to back Pete up there, I was confused about that when we were reading these. I get that. But I will say, I was like, wow, what a whiff.
All right, after Titans, let's talk about Titans. Imagine if that would we
Thor
just
Thor is a Titan?
Yeah, what if we just reviewed the same comic like 30 times in a row instead of new comics? That would be easier.
Let me throw this out. What if we had Pete handle all the transitions? Speaking of Titans, long pause, a lot of questions. And again, no delays. No delays on this podcast. We keep it going. We keep it chugging along. Speaking of Titans...
The Mortal Thor number 5 from Marvel, written by Al Ewing, art by Pasquale Ferry. After moving back to Asgard, or maybe Valhalla in the previous issue, we're now back on Earth, where there's a man named Sigurd Jarlsson, who has a hammer and may or may not be Thor. We're getting a little bit more from Loki and Odin, who are manipulating things in the background. And also, we have the return of Donald Blake. For those who don't remember, Donald Blake is now a big villain in the Marvel Universe. We get to see a new iteration of him here. I think I was negative. I was the one that was the most negative about the last issue, but I'm curious to hear, now that we're back to the main storyline, what did you guys think of this one?
This was cool. I thought I really appreciated we got kind of more backstory and a little bit of more of like what's going on with this character and how he got to the place that he's at. I feel like the villain is fun. The may or may not be Thor got into a limbo. I feel like a little bit too trusting, you know what I mean? And I felt bad for Chris there because she seemed like she was really into Thor. But the art on the kind of villain, it has this kind of like mischievous Disney vibe that is fun. I think it's...
You're saying you like it?
Yeah.
Oh, I agree. I think Pasquale Ferry's art is really great here because it's very clean. I've always seen him as a very clean, very modern feeling. But there is such a retro vibe to these characters and the way they're talking to each other. Like Blake in a limo holding this like snake cane. There's so much snake imagery here, which I think is interesting because that's not really... That's more Christian mythology, not really Nordic mythology. But it's such a focus here. My question, does our construction worker throw Thor know he's Thor?
I start to suspect that he's not Thor, this issue. That there's going to be some sort of swerve there.
Well, he has this in the scene when he's in the limo with Blake. And I love also, just to keep blowing it up, like, I love that Donald Blake is the villain, and the way the scene between Odin and Loki talking about like, hey, we messed up. We made Thor immortal, but he made his alter ego. We left a vacuum and let him take the godhead position. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, that's awesome. I love that. It's like Bruce Wayne versus Batman, something that we don't really see very often. But there's this scene when our construction worker Thor is in the limo with Blake, and he's like, I'm nobody special. I'm nobody important. Nobody special. I'm just a man. Do you hear me? I'm just a man. And I'm like, that he must know. Like, to be protesting that much feels like he knows. And
thus,
that's such an interesting layer. Exactly. But I also love the horrifying design of Blake is really cool and such a surprise. Pasquale Ferry never really doing a lot of horror. I love the cop scene where they're like, yeah, having a bungee cord and a hammer is very strange. I'm like, yes, agreed, guy.
I really like this as well. I was kind of negative about the last issue just because I have been enjoying this part of the run so much. It was nice to get back to it. Like you guys said, love Pasquale Ferry's art. Love the thrust of here. I'm curious to see how much longer they can maintain this because it feels like it's barreling through the story pretty quickly.
Oh, I feel like there's just so much story, though.
I feel like it's more hammering through the story than barreling, but I hear you.
I mean, you can hammer barrels.
That's sure can.
That's classic Cooper. We got a Cooper talking over here.
Mm-hmm.
We're hanging with Mr. Cooper in a lot of ways.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US Soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Titans number 30. No, Wrestle Heist number 1 from Image Comics, written and drawn by Kyle Starks. This is a brand new series where basically the title, there's a wrestler who is injured by the wrestling promoter, and years later he decides to pull a heist on the guy. We don't really get to see too much of the heist or put it together the crew in this first issue, but there's still lots of building out of the world and all of the wrestlers there. And there's a crazy amount of back matter from Kyle Starks that is absolutely wild. And I will mention, it's not up yet. It is up, excuse me, for Patreon supporters. Justin and I talked to Kyle Starks for about an hour, mostly about his Vertigo book, but we talked about this a lot. And there's even crazier stuff coming up with this book. For everybody else who isn't a Patreon supporter, it'll be going up at the regular Comic Book Club feed on Friday, so check it out. But I thought this book was great. I love Kyle Starks' stuff anyway, but having him writing and drawing, which has been rare for the past couple of years, is a delight. So I'll read anything he does.
The two big things to take away from this, from talking to Kyle specifically, is the insane amount of time and effort he puts into the back matter. You have, if you're at all a wrestling fan, he has interviews, questionnaires that he sent to a ton of people in the comic book industry and beyond to get their favorite wrestler takes, which is like wild to have that be just 2 pages of that in the back of this comic. And he's like, oh, there's so much more of that to see in here. And then we talked about him. Talk to Kyle about how he puts this together, and he just sort of goes cold. He creates this comic through, I think he said he does thumbnails first and then goes right into drawing it, never writes a script.
What?
And I feel like I've never heard of doing it that way. I think people do thumbnails, then most people, I think, do script first. Yeah. Some people do thumbnails, then script. Kyle dispenses with all that. Those words and just goes right
and to be
into
clear,
it. For stuff.
This is for his stuff. When he's doing stuff that with he draws, other people, he's much more locked up there. But yeah, it's kind of like almost improvised comics, and that loose comedy feel plays so well. Like there's so
it's
many,
really strong.
The jokes are so dense and constant. It's a blast.
Yeah, this is awesome. I had a blast reading this. I love the setup. The kind of the story that we get, the backstory of why he wants to rob this place and what it's about is great. Really builds nicely. The art has such a fun vibe to it. So it's like it adds such a nice sprinkling of lightness to all the kind of insanity that's happening. Yeah, this is just a great vibe. Fun first issue. It really kind of gets you on board with what's going on and gets you excited for more.
Next up, DC KO's Zatanna versus Harley Quinn, number one from DC Comics, written by Leah Williams, art by Mirka Andolfo. This is the second All Fight Month title we're going to be talking about.
Yeah.
And this one, to me, was more like it. This is more what I've come to expect from this mini event inside the event. First of all, you got Mirka Andolfo on art, and great, always great to see her. I really like her art style. It's like cartoony, but it leans into these characters in particular so well. But she also morphs her art style throughout the book to match the different part of the best two out of three rounds that are going on in this fight between Zatanna and Harley. Surprisingly, this is the second one of the week where after Swamp Thing is like, let me die, here, spoilers, and I should have mentioned spoiler warning before, Harley kind of does the same thing. And that, to me, was a big surprise because I think just given publishing outside plans, you would expect Harley to go the distance. But I like how they came around to it. I thought this was well plotted and was a interesting exploration of Zatanna even more than Harley Quinn, because Harley is very even throughout while Zatanna grows and goes places. So in my mind, another successful one shot.
Yeah, I agree. This is a blast, a fun cover. Yeah, I liked how in the first one, Harley outsmarted Zatanna, you know, took away her vocal cords so she couldn't use magic. Very smart, very cool. I liked how this evolved and the fight moved on. I love the pace of this. The art was amazing. Yeah, this was awesome. This is DCKO, like having a lot of fun exploring characters during a giant battle. I love this. Zatanna wins.
And really setting up, I agree with all of what you're saying before, and really setting up Zatanna to be a power player. Like, what I think is nice about each of these issues, even like the Cyborg Swamp Thing one, which didn't really have as much juice to it, I feel like it is setting up all of these characters to have a real drive forward. Like, Zatanna's ready. You can feel the Omega coursing through her on the last page of this story. And that's exciting. I think that's the hype that they keep doing a great job building. Just wanted to say about the design, too, of these books across the plane. Like, the way they do the KOs as big, splashy, video game-style KOs in every issue, no matter what's happening, that's really smart. Yeah. Good editorial work there.
Daredevil and the Punisher, The Devil's Trigger, number two from Marvel, written by Jimmy Palmiotti, art by Tommaso Bianchi and Gabriel Guzman. This is a follow-up on the One Bad Day conversation, and here we flip the perspective a little more to Daredevil after he had been pushed hard by the Punisher to potentially kill people or be blamed in killing people. And after a hard day, Punisher heads to the subway, which turns out to be a mistake. Just like Pete, he gets a meatball sub and it just does not sit right with him, period.
Mm. Yeah, Pete, this must have been, as someone, you must be terrified of New York from reading this, but I assure you this doesn't happen as often as it does in this comic.
Yeah.
If you were to ever come to this New York City where Alex and I tough it out every day.
Well, congratulations on still being there. You know, I did my 20-year bid. I felt good about it. I thought this was a lot of fun and cool and a great kind of heightening of what happened in the last issue and this exploration of these two characters. And
oh my God,
Pete's crying. He loves these two.
Just like how they kind of handle and deal and their different levels and all that kind of stuff. So it's fun. You know, we got to see it in the TV show a little bit on the roof there. And this is just kind of a cool extension of that. And I appreciate what they're doing here.
Last time, too, that it was in the comics first. The rooftop scene was in the comics first. Then they adapted it for TV.
Yes, but now the TV show became this kind of iconic moment that I felt,
Yeah. So you would say TV is better than comics.
You dislike comics.
No, yeah. I'm just saying that
comics get washed away by TV shows. TV shows are more
important. The guy who always wants them to put comics in the Marvel flip because you
know,
got it.
So it's crazy to me that you're calling out an iconic moment in the comic books with Daredevil and Punisher and saying it's a TV moment.
I'm just saying it kind of made popularized by the TV show and became a, I wouldn't have, sorry. Sorry for trying to update my lexicon.
Look at the mid-sentence apology.
Jesus Christ. Yeah, comics are great, but sometimes they can be done differently and brought to life in different ways. But then brought back to the comic for a continuation of the discussion, like in this issue, and I appreciated that.
Yeah. I mean, and on a similar note, I think they really captured Thomas Jane's character in this one.
Oh, my God. Dirty laundry forever.
I don't know who's bearing what standard here.
Can I mention something not apropos of this? This is a very old fact that I think people have known for years, but I just learned it this past week. Apparently, Thomas Jane was the first choice for Rick Grimes on The Walking Dead, but he couldn't do it because he was doing, what was the show where he had a big penis? Hung. Where he was doing Hung. So he did Hung instead of The Walking Dead, and he could have been Rick Grimes, which is crazy. Anyway, go on.
Wow. What a world we live in.
Cool.
The great Foggy scene. Foggy overorders, let me be honest a little bit here.
Oh, whoa.
Knew that was appropriate. I don't know. I really like this comic. I really love. It's such a New Yorker thing to do to be like, I'm super fucked up, but I gotta get home, so I'm gonna jump on the subway.
Yep.
The Punisher is so, he's like bleeding. Yeah. He's like jagged up, and he's like, I better just jump on the L.
It's faster.
Yeah, it is. Believe me, faster. You know, mm-hmm. not as expensive with the way prices, taxi prices. Oh, taxis, man. Like taxis. I don't know if you have like it's like a horse, but you pay it's an automated horse.
Justin, as somebody who also lives in New York City, do you feel like they neglected the scene where he traded in his old MetroCard for OmniCard? Because as we all know, at this point, there are 3 weeks left to use the MetroCard before he can't use it anymore.
What?
I feel like the Punisher has a couple of tokens in his little pouch.
Yeah,
like,
bring
slot
back the
for
tokens.
These?
I'll tell you what, it's crazy. Like, I think about that sometimes, and I think about how, like, I used to have, like, a pocket full of Subway tokens that I would walk around with at all points. That's insane.
That's great. I never lived in this city when you had that. I feel like it had just ended when I moved to New York. Right? When did that end? Because I never had to do that.
It was still in 99, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was after
that. I don't
know.
It was definitely in the 2000s for sure. They switched over to MetroCards. But, like, yeah, I mean, I remember. There was definitely a point when, like, maybe it was summers or something that I was living in the city where it was just, like, your pocket full, jangling with tokens all the time.
Oh, yeah, your little short shorts heading out on the town.
Yeah, headed to Central Park.
I know you guys. Anyway, I like this comic. Wow. It is very New York. They are taking time to really hit the subways and pay homage to them. So that's nice. Especially like Daredevil being like, oh, shit, I just ran into the Punisher on the subway. Been there.
Dude.
I bet ran into my personal Punisher on the subway.
Oh, yeah. It's always fun when you run into someone you don't want to see in the subway. At first, I thought it was going to be hilarious where, like, the Punisher was, like, bleeding out. And then Showtime was happening. He would have to be, like, you know, participating in Showtime. Like, as, yeah. I was like, yeah, oh, this is going to be hilarious.
Do you think there should have been a scene where the Punisher's waiting on the platform and then Daredevil walks in and he's, like, one car down from him? He's like, oh, my God.
Oh, no.
This guy. Yeah. He knows I'm here. I know he's here. We got to say hi.
He looks like he's been shot. I have to go say hi to him because he can't come to me.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, Daredevil just puts headphones in and ignores him. But the headphones are really loud because he's so sensitive to hearing stuff. Yeah. So
he's like, you're one train car away from being me. Something like that.
Oh, exactly. The screeching from the subway must be very hard for our guy.
Oh, my God. That must be brutal.
World Tree, number 17 from Image Comics, written by James Tynan the IV, art by Fernando Blanco. The past couple of issues have been set in the post-apocalyptic future after World Tree, the Undernet, has invaded the real world. But now we're jumping back in time, back to the main story before all this has happened, as well as getting some revelations. I'll tell you what, there's a lot going on in this book.
Yeah,
there is a lot going on. I do like it still. And honestly, reading this issue, I was like, oh, this book is sort of like halfway between the movie Sneakers, if you know that,
what did it sound like?
Oh, yes, of course. Whistler? You talking about that?
Oh, yeah.
And like I really like it, but there the timelines are hard to quite square which characters are all siding together, you know?
Yeah.
Well, particularly because this part of the story has been away for months, if not maybe a year. I honestly don't know the schedule at this point. So jumping back in, they're like, yeah, you know all of these 30 characters. Here we go. Which is tough. It's a tough read.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, I never finished. Department of Truth is the comic. It's like Sneakers meets Department of Truth for the internet. And that's what World Tree's feeling like. But the... I want the story to coalesce a little harder, to your point out.
That's a great combo, though. Yeah, this is cool. I love the art. Some fun kind of flash forward, flashback. You know, two people talking on a bench, you know. Love the art style. I thought the last panel was fun. But it's a weird tone, but it works perfect for this story.
Wonder Woman, number 28 from DC Comics, written by Tom King, art by Daniel Sampere and Jorge Fornes. Bunch of stuff going on in this issue as we wrap up the Mouse Man arc while teeing the upcoming Wonder War, which is going to find Wonder Woman and others against the Matriarch. We've already seen a dark future where the Matriarch has very much won. And that, I believe, is Jorge Fornes' part in this issue, is watching the Matriarch take down all the villains that Wonder Woman never could, while Wonder Woman, meanwhile, is triumphant against Mouse Man. This title continues to be excellently written and drawn, and I'm very much looking forward to Wonder War.
Yeah,
really seamlessly connects the end of this arc with the beginning of the next. Like, you just don't even realize you're already in the Matriarch stuff happening right after this. I love the way that Wonder Woman completely suborns Mouse Man, where he's like using his language. He now only speaks Wonder Woman, which is cool. Wonder Woman knows is his last line that we see him here. Love that. Enjoyed the analogy of all of that. And then moving into just a completely other idea with this Matriarch fight.
Yeah, this is a blast. I agree with everything that's been said. This has been really enjoyable watching this kind of wind down. Also fun that Wonder Woman just has a baby now. You know what I mean? She's like, yo, I got a baby. Batman, Superman, like, back off. Don't judge me. I got a kid now. And they're like, I don't know what's going on. So yeah, this is great. I'm very excited for the next arc, and hopefully she can take down Matriarch, but looks like she's going to be tough.
Great use of the invisible jet here.
Oh yes, my God. I was going to bring that up. Just seeing like her top part of her torso just sort of floating there in the air. Very fun.
Fun.
Strange Tales, number 3 from Marvel, written by Jeremy Whitley, art by Bailey Underwood. This is a book that is slowly building up a D&D-style role-playing game team, is sort of the idea behind here. But in practicality, we got the Hulk attacking Wakanda and a bunch of weird random heroes trying to figure out what is wrong with him. This title continues to be absolutely delightful. The whole mix of characters is so weird, but it works. Everything is well balanced with everybody.
Yeah.
And the art by Bailey Underwood is very cartoony and a lot of fun as well. This is a great book to hand to absolutely anybody.
To have like Shuri, Hulk, Wanda Maximoff, Nico, and the Staff of One, like, this is all really operating. And, you know, as I was reading this, I was like, why am I enjoying this so much? And I was like, I know why. This feels like a classic 90s annual crossover. Yeah. This is the Vibranium Vendetta in series form. Like, all these random characters are like, hey, we're here to do this one thing. Who are you? Oh, I know you from, I bumped into you once. Like, I love it. I love the tone is really hitting that. The way they beat the Hulk in this is really smart and really fun, surprising. I'm so on board with this.
Yeah, this is great. I also love the teamwork. You know what I mean? Like, a lot of times when you're reading a comic, they got to fight.
Are you talking about the three of us reviewing these comics, Pete?
No.
Or did you mean
no, I'm talking about in the comic. Yep.
But we're working together pretty well. You know, it's our 19th anniversary.
Yeah, happy anniversary.
What did you get me?
Yeah. It's ironically, it's the comic book anniversary of the 19th year.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I love it when people work well together and we can just
really
showcase.
Pete, you like people really working well together, getting along, not throwing any curveballs at each other.
That's right.
Interrupting each other and whatnot.
Don't like it. What I'm trying
to
say.
I like how there are no delays between any of the characters in this comic. No delays. They're just really concise moving, you know?
Yeah. They should put that on the cover. No delays this issue.
Yeah.
That should be the name. No delays. Number three.
The art
Marvel Comics.
The art had such a great vibe to it. It was light and fun. You know, it's a little cuter than I like my Hulk, but I thought it worked really well.
A little
in
manga
this.
Influence.
Yeah,
maybe.
Yeah. But yeah, just I had a blast with this, and I agree this was an awesome read.
The Author Immortal, number three from Image Comics, written by Frank J. Barbieri, art by Morgan Beam. We talked to Frank on the live show a couple of weeks back, so go and listen to that. But Pete, you've been really enjoying this one. You were pretty high on this issue, which finds our main author character in the thrall of a horrible spider creature that we see on the cover of this issue. Meanwhile, his child is trying to find him, and also an older version of his child is trying to find him. Meanwhile, back on Earth, our J.K. Rowling stand-in is making some moves of her own. What are you enjoying about this so much, Pete?
Well, first off, the cover is so scary and creepy. I thought, like, no way I got a shot in enjoying this, but I really did. I thought the comics art such a cool tone. Art was just so impressive. I'm a sucker for watercolors. It's scary. It's beautiful. It's all the things, but a really creative story. I'm having a blast with this. I was just so pleasantly surprised. I looked at the cover and thought, oh, fuck, I'm not going to like this because spiders scare the fuck out of me. And this is like
all
a spider person. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Imagine a Spider-Man. Ugh. Disgusting.
Yeah.
That'd be horrible. What colors do you think a Spider-Man would be? I would say probably black, because
gray.
A lot of spiders. Yeah, brown, something like that.
Wispy and white, like, you know, the web.
I really like this.
I really like this comic. I've been talking.
I also really like this comic.
The comic's not listening to us right now. What I love about this,
happy
if you're
anniversary
a fan,
comic.
Oh boy,
yeah. Alex married this comic.
By the way, that's what I, just to check, because this has been a little confusing. My wife hasn't corrected. When you look and see what type of anniversary it is, it's you are giving that thing a present, right? Like when it's the gold anniversary, you're giving gold a present, etc.
Yeah, you give your partner two gold. You offer like a tithe to paper.
I've been doing it right then. Take it away, Justin.
It is crazy. They're like, did you get your wife a wood present this year? I'm like, wood? Am I going to make a boat?
You know,
sorry, it's not that time anymore. Holiday? Let's change this. Can we change this? Where's the lotion one? Can we get lotion as one of them? Anyway, I'll save that for my tight 5 minutes. This comic book I enjoy, and I was going
to
say,
I want a gift card for lotion.
If you're a fan of the comics Fables or Books of Magic from back in the day, you should give this a shot, because this comic, both in the writing and the art, is very much in that line. But it's modern, it's smart, the characters are really engaging, the action is terrifying. Throughout and moves very quickly, I think, especially for a third issue. We're going so far so fast in a good way.
And it turns out both the traditional and a modern gift for the 19th anniversary is bronze. So I got you a comic book that is inspired by the Bronze Age of comics. Superman, the Kryptonite Spectrum, number 5
what
from DC Comics, written by W. Maxwell Prince, art by Martin Morazzo. This is the final issue of this title, which has found Superman dealing with a bunch of weird types of kryptonite. Lex Luthor don't care, though, and he's using the opportunity to attack Superman and Metropolis and the world. But it all comes together here in this finale. What'd you guys think? What'd you guys think about the end and the series as a whole?
Well, first off, really fun cover. Yeah, I thought this was really fun. A cool idea, really well executed by this team. We know them from Ice Cream Man, so it's cool to see them do something that's not as creepy, but it's fun to see a little creepy brought to the Spider-Man world. Yeah, artistically, this is impressive. Also, fun kind of like classic, how are we going to get out of this? Well, we'll have to turn him into a baby. That's how you save him. You just babyify him. It's funny how Wonder Woman just got a baby, and now Superman turned into a baby. You know what I mean?
But I like that. I think this comic does just a great job of being so. I mean, you said Bronze Age, Alex, but like Silver Age feels more what you meant. Yes, pun aside, wordplay aside, the art is reflected that Martin Morazzo's art is so perfect, modern reflection of that, having a little bit more dark underpinnings to it, some more modern things. There's some great just little jokes in here at the same time telling a really compelling story about Superman action sequence. This cover's very cool. If no one else had the balls to say it, I'll say it. I love the use of Batman in this comic as well. Just a great, as a five-issue series, what a great pickup this is.
Yes.
Alien vs. Captain America number 2 for Marvel, written by Frank Thierry, art by Stefano Raphael. While last issue was a slow burn of introducing the concept of aliens, this issue, the Howling Commandos get completely ripped apart by Xenomorphs, among other weird things going on here. So I will say the last issue, I was like, oh, I'm surprised Frank Thierry is being so restrained. Well, he was... He's holding nothing back here. He's franking it up. He's Frank and Beans in this issue. Pete, I'm surprised to see you cheering for the death of the Howling Commandos. I fully expected for you to be pissed about that.
Well, yeah, I was. It was a real emotional roller coaster where I was like, no. But then once I saw Cap, ripping that or cutting that head off of an alien with his shield, I was like, well, I got what I wanted. This is awesome. So, some real ups and downs, but man, this is tons of action, fun twists and turns. Bucky, you can't just go around touching people. You know what I mean? Consent is important.
Well, did not expect you to end your review with that sentiment. Yes, I agree. This is great action. I was fully shocked to see the Howling Commandos go down so hard.
Yeah.
So that was cool to be surprised by that. And then the turn it takes in the sort of last four pages, bringing in another area of Marvel continuity, I was also shocked by. So, you know, Frank Thierry surprising me multiple times in this comic. This comic is taking swings that it doesn't need to take, which is an exciting place for something that is like... just a crossover alien and superhero comic.
The Power Fantasy, number 14 from Image Comics, written by Kieran Gillen, art by Casper Wingard. Things have been really heating up here in this title for the past couple of the issues, leading to the death of a major character in the previous issue. And now we're dealing with the fallout in a big way. We've said this a million times here about this title, but this team builds tension like no other. And while a lot of this issue is, like I'm saying, dealing with this repercussions of the death of Etienne, who is our Professor X stand-in for this sort of pseudo X-Men in this world, the last couple of pages are so tense and they're nothing but a person's face and a couple of words on the page. It's perfectly paced out. There's really nothing like this on the stands.
For a comic that I think thrives on its density, the way they like just stretched out this moment in the back six pages of this was such a fun tone change or pace change for something that I just didn't expect it here. And I thought it was really, really well done. We talked to these guys, I want to say last year at New York Comic Con, was it, Alex? And I felt their joy and their meticulousness on display together in this issue particularly, because they're so careful and they are so excited about talking about this story, and how they work together, I think, allows us to have these moments that catch us off guard.
Yeah, I mean, I'm running out of ways to say this comic is really cool and interesting and exciting and great. But it is those things, and the art is unbelievable. I'm not sure what's happening all the time, but I know it's good.
Just like reality.
Ooh, deep, bro.
Well, let's see if you understand what's going on here in Superman Unlimited, number 8 from DC Comics, written by Dan Slott and Jeremy Adams, art by Lucas Meyer. In this issue, per the cover, Superman is dealing with Guy Gardner a little bit. There's some other stuff going on in the world. There you go.
Yeah. sick bowl cut. Yeah, this is fun. They're having a great time with Toy Man and Guy Gardner here. I feel like this is really a solid, some cute moments between Lois and Supes. Yeah.
Yeah, there's some nice relationship stuff here. I mean, it's reading this is such a sort of pace change from all of the DC continuity stuff, the all-in stuff, everything that's happening with KO. So it definitely requires a mental gear shift diving into this, but... But that's what the title is. It's Superman Unlimited. It's not. It's out of continuity, even though it still has the all-in branding. But it is fun. Guy Gardner, they interact surprisingly very little in this comic, mm-hmm. but we get a lot of each of their vibes throughout.
This, to me, felt a little bit more like Dan Slott doing a Fantastic Four plot over in Superman, which is fine. It is also interesting, although... to see Dan, who is great, I love him, he is not, even he admits this, not the fastest guy when it comes to writing. And Christos Gage was kind of his pinch hitter, who would come in and help him out when he was running a yeah. little bit behind. Seems like Jeremy Adams maybe is going to fill that slot over in DC.
Good that's slot.
Yeah, slot. And I think that's a good slot. Match. Like, they have similar tones, so that's good. So, yeah, there you go. Next up, Planet She-Hulk number 2 from Marvel, written by Stephanie Phillips, Ooh. Art by Aaron Cooter. She-Hulk is stuck on Sakaar, which is having a succession battle to see who is going to rule the planet. The one person who doesn't really want to rule the planet, but is kind of in charge, is She-Hulk. Meanwhile, others are jockeying for control. I'm going to be very repetitive with this title, but I always say it, I'll read anything that Aaron Cooter draws.
Yeah, love Aaron Cooter's art here. There's a great just fight sequence where we get to see She-Hulk, her, we get to hear her internal monologue as she's fighting someone who she clearly likes and is like wants to be close with. But I'm loving the tone. Like the original Planet Hulk was like Hulk barbarian meeting yes. barbarian world. And so yeah. it was all about the power magnification of that. And I just love the twist with this of She-Hulk being like, this world is dumb, and I want to undercut it, and I want to do the right thing because I want to fix it and not just punch it. And that's such a – not. And I'm not slagging off the original Planet Hulk at all when I say this is such a great second beat to what Planet Hulk did. So I am so on board with this. This is one of the titles I'm most excited about as we move into the new year.
Yeah, I agree. This is a fun – what's She-Hulk's take on this? We got kind of this cool fish-out-of-water story, and her kind of how she deals with this planet is such a fun thing that I have not gotten tired of at all, and I can't wait for more of this. Stephanie Phillips is doing a hell of a job writing this. This is just great. The art's fantastic. The pace of this is great. I'm having so much fun with this, and I can't wait for the next issue.
Artificial number 4 from Image Comics, written and drawn by Maria Lovett. This is the last issue of this title about a sex bot who is a little crazy with the role play.
Oh, man.
And in this issue, he comes back to our heroine's apartment and proceeds to assault her and beat up the guy who was her ex-boyfriend, I believe, and now is still interested in her. I thought that, like a lot of Maria Lovett stuff, this started strong and then got slightly off the rails by the end here in a way where it kind of undercuts the satirical and fun concept that she started with.
Well, you know, I get that take, but I actually, I took it the other way. Like, I felt like this was a great... I really like this, and it was it's very upsetting. Like what happens in this story, like a type of a sort of AI driven assault that the human characters in this are unable to really know how to react to. So I like that as a metaphor for like our lives, but I especially liked it because Maria Lovett's sort of reputation or the expectation you get when you open this book is you're going to read something that is like a bit of a sexual romp story and with a twist, with a sci-fi fantasy comic book twist. This like unsettles that. This goes against that. This like that expectation is savaged and used to sort of point out and how wrong you are and give power to what happens in this story. And I thought that was just such an effective and bold use of Maria Lovett's reputation to tell a story that is very different than that.
Yeah, I mean, this is the classic tale as old as time. You know, Terminator warned us, you know, you can't fuck robots. You know, robots are going to fuck us.
Is this a philosophy you've written down anywhere, Pete?
No, I'm just seeing Terminator. You know what I mean? I know how it goes. You know, you can't trust a robot even if
Pete's absolutely right. That was the message of the first movie. They skipped a little bit on the second, but the third one is called Terminator Rise of the Machines. I mean, come on.
Yeah. Come on. It makes a lot of sense. Right there. I remember Arnold Schwarzenegger saying over and over again, "Don't fuck me." Yeah. He kept saying, "Don't fuck me."
Yeah, he did.
But he meant it for real.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, this one. Horrible moments with the assault, but you know, I was happy that you could read this one in public a little bit more, so that was nice. The art is
ironic. Take
art is great.
Yeah, interesting. Art is always great. Always will read anything Maria Lovett does, but we are clearly at an impasse with this fight we're having over this comic book.
Mm-hmm. This is a big fight. No delays.
Yeah. Space Don't Scouts, number two from Dark Horse Comics, written by Matt Kent, art by David Rubin. We are following a bunch of folks who are auditioning to become the next Space Scouts, but there's a big twist in terms of what the whole program is about. It's not really signing up to be the next Guardians of the Galaxy. It's something else entirely, which we find out towards the end here. Pete, I believe this was one of your picks for the week.
Yeah.
So what did you think about this issue?
Pete's picks.
Just really enjoying this. Love the action. Quirky art has a fun tone to it. It kind of sets up this crazy alien world. The battle to be Space Scout here is real. So, you know, all they need is just a year of your time, you know, like, but what if they say no? You know what I mean? Like, what happens then? So, yeah, I'm into this. It's great. You know, it's you give your job, you know, your life, and they just keep taking and taking and taking, you know. So I think this is an interesting idea and really well executed, very creative and unique. So I'm all about it.
Pete's Pigs, closing it out. I also really like this. A full half of the issue is just telling the backstory of these individual characters,
who
we later find out many of which die unceremoniously. So I love that as a very Matt Kent thing to do. And then the sort of dark underbelly that is exposed in the back half, I thought was really cool and well done. This reminds me of, you know, something like, we're not, it's like Starship Troopers. We're not getting a big comment on society per se, but it has that thing of being like, we're going to tell you this, but we are merciless with killing these characters because we are about something else with it.
If you're an HVAC technician and a call comes in, Grainger knows that you need a partner that helps you find the right product fast and hassle-free. And you know that when the first problem of the day is a clanking blower motor, there's no need to break a sweat. With Grainger's easy-to-use website and product details, you're confident you'll soon have everything humming right along. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
And now it is time. The revelation will continue until morale improves. We are getting... We're getting
and this is a big one. It's a big block.
Yeah, we are at our Age of Revelation block. We got five titles to talk about this week. Now, Justin, what I was thinking about mainly while I was reading these is you saying last week, and that's it then. They're finishing it up next week. And I was like, nope, there's more. And guess what? There's even more after this. There's an entire other week with even more new titles before then finally we get to the end of Age
Wait,
of Revelation.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
What are the other ones? Do we have more third issues coming?
Because I looked at the back of the issue, like, there can't possibly be more beyond this. And there are. Oh, there are.
Holy
Buckle up.
It's like another
there
four
is.
Or five comics.
It's great news. Oh, more
yes.
comics.
Oh, you're right. I will say, you're right, Pete. You are right. Though I will say the ones that are coming next are Cloak or Dagger is yeah, one I'm very
like
excited
that.
For.
Yes.
Yeah.
But it does end on New Year's Eve. Is the
when they're not releasing it in shops until midnight on New Year's Eve.
Yeah.
Like you actually
be
have
there.
To. They hand it over. They go 10, 9, 8, and they're slowly handing it over the counter to you.
That's I can't wait to kiss the Marvel Comics employee on the mouth when they hand me this comic.
Oh, wow.
That'll be wonderful. Anyway, we do have some Age of Revelation titles to talk about, so let's start
let's
with the Mindy
it.
Kids. And these are all final issues of these particular three-issue miniseries. Omega Kids, number 3, written by Tony Fleece, art by Andre Genelet. This has been following a team of psychic mutants taught ostensibly by Quentin Quire, except they've been manipulating him and have decided to eliminate anybody who has bad thoughts about Revelation, which, as is clarified in this issue, is literally everybody. Things get turned by the end here. And even though it sounded like we were very negative about Age of Revelation, probably because we are, this is definitely one of the better titles. And I thought the way yes. this wrapped up, really dialing down on Quentin Quire's character in a fun, surprising way was great. This miniseries was very good.
Yeah, I agree. This one was good. And, you know, the best ones of these, and there are a couple in this stack that we're going to talk about, I think just go dark. They make it feel very Age of Apocalypse-y. And this one definitely did that. The way this goes, went last issue into this issue, and you feel like we're riding with the kids, even though they're, like, doing something pretty fucked up. And then something fucked up happens to them in the end. I was like, whew, this is back-to-back bummers, but really well done, I thought.
Yeah, I also thought this was enjoyable. It's nice to spend this kind of quality time with Quentin Quire. You know, he's a handful as usual, but I thought this was
kind of... He's a handful. He's a scamp.
Oh, boy. Boy, is he. But
are you on Quentin Quire duty this weekend, Pete, or is that Justin?
That's Justin.
Okay.
I had last week.
Yeah. All right. I'm dyeing his beard purple. I thought he was, but I hear he changed his mutant power so he grows purple hair now.
As Justin likes to say to his wife, we're going to need a new batch of kids. You know what I mean? Great art.
What?
Cool story. That line where he was like, we're going to need a new batch of kids. You say that all the time.
That's not the part. Okay.
I do say that a lot. That's like sort of my catchphrase.
Yeah, that's what
I'm
trying
like,
to say.
I'm like, more kids, I say a lot. Like, I want more kids.
Yeah, we want babies.
Yeah, Tony Fleece killing the game. It's this kind of evil Ileana is very interesting. You got to be Tony Fleece and kid me.
There it is.
Yes. Also, just to clarify for anybody listening, it is not Ileana. It
she
is just
looks.
Yeah,
she's a similar haircut.
Yeah, she has bangs.
You're telling me there's another banged character? Are you serious?
Seems impossible to me. Yeah. Rogue Storm, number 3, written by
Rogue Storm.
Yodelet, art by Roland Bosky. This is following two timelines. One where Rogue Red is confronting Storm, whose powers are out of control. And then years later, X years later, one might even say, when Storm is dealing
Don't
with a bunch of mystical, god-like things going on. As usual, Burwai Yodelet goes for it in this issue with some absolutely wild stuff. The strongest, clearest thing to me was probably the Gambit Rogue stuff, which continues to hit after Unbreakable X-Men, I want to say, last week.
Yeah.
Just a great relationship.
The Gail
you can't
Simone,
do wrong
yeah.
with.
Well, and this is with Gambit and a different rogue, technically.
Yeah.
So
technically.
That's also well done. Yeah, I mean, I think you nailed it with, like, Yodelay going hard, like bringing in the elements from the Storm series and telling a story that is wild. The whole Split Rogue thing, I was like, is this something that has happened a bunch of times before? And I'm like, I don't think so. But it's just like, nope, this is what we're doing. There are two of them. And I was like, okay. Did they just have a fight and they were like, we both want Rogues? Like, well, make two. Who cares? And it worked, because I do think Rogue Storm and Unbreakable X-Men were two of my favorite of the Revelation books. So I'm happy they did it, even though it's weird.
Yeah, I really love this issue. Such a cool issue, a sad, a beautiful, when Rogue, it just kind of disappears and you just got the knuckle dusters there. Oh, that's so badass. I love that. Great art, great story. There's a lot of great, cool battles happening. I can't wait for the next issue.
There is no next issue.
There's no more next issue.
Done. These are all done.
Well, the next
Storm.
Storm. Thank you. Yes.
Oh, okay. All right. Got it. The next issue, I believe, is Titans number 30, if I remember correctly.
Speaking of Titans.
The last Wolverine number 3, written by Saladin Ahmed, art by Edgar Salazar. This is following the Wendigo that Wolverine used to pal around with, as well as Heather Hudson, who now has one eye, coming after Wolverine, who has been brainwashed by Revelation, and they have a big fight on a rooftop in this issue, leading to some change of status quo and the death of at least one major character. I think my favorite part of this issue is when the Wendigo ate some people and was like,
let me finally read the quote. I have this pulled up because I was like, this is wild. Wendigo, at the end of the issue, this is sort of his last thing he says before we close the shop on this character for a long, long time,
I'm sure. Don't say that.
He's like, to feel my fangs sinking into sweet meat, human meat. He's biting a person's arm at this moment. And for the first time in years, I admit the truth to myself. I miss this. I was like, is this the end of like a Gilmore Girls episode? And he's eating human flesh. Wild.
Yeah. That was, I believe, the last episode is Rory eats
Lorelai. I don't remember that.
No, it is. They only
remember that in Gilmore Girls.
It's not on Netflix. Oh, okay. Netflix wouldn't share it to you.
Yeah, they don't have the balls.
What did you think about the scene where after they cut off Wolverine's arm and he's like, whoa, thanks for cutting off my arm. Then the Wendigo is like, your healing factor is probably back. I'm going to throw you off this roof.
Well, here's the thing. This issue exposed like just the major problem with Revelation as a Age of Revelation as a crossover. It's like, wait, what the fuck is happening? Like, in this issue, Wolverine is like, he's been like this big monster, the sort of monster at Revelation's beck and call, who's been babbled, supposedly, doesn't understand language anymore, but also mind controlled by Revelation somehow, right?
Right, right.
I'm not making that up.
Nope, nope. Yeah. It's true.
And in this issue, they somehow stop that from happening, cut his arm off, throw him off the roof, and then he's just regular again. And then we're meant to, and then he like
but does
walks
have an arm.
Off. He walks off with one arm. And it's like, I guess my wife's dead, a relationship we know nothing about nor care about technically because we haven't seen it at all. And then the only thing I care about now is finding Revelation and making him pay. I was like, what are you talking about?
There's a lot of that happening in these issues this month where it ends with like, and we're coming for Revelation. And I'm like, all right, I get it. These are the last issues of the thing. But like you're saying, there hasn't been enough setup of anything for the most part. We're not in these characters' head. Like having Wolverine show up with one arm at the end saying he's coming for Revelation, I have to think they're going to put that silly little Age of Apocalypse metal cap on him so that he looks like that again or something like that. I don't know what
maybe
they're going
different part
for
of his
there,
arm.
But like, yeah, I don't know.
Well, and like it also like this event is technically from its spine is like a 2-issue event because all these 3-issue series seemingly have nothing. Like there's no spine here. We don't know Revelation. Someone said this in the comments on the live show. I think Eric MCI on Twitch was like, Why is Revelation isn't working? Because we don't know anything about Revelation. Like, mm-hmm. He was a good guy, and then he was sort of like being a little extreme, but still part of the X-Men. He showed up and joined the X-Men, Scott Summers X-Men. And then now he's like this big bad that we don't know anything about. And now we're meant to root for Apocalypse and Charles Xavier, two characters who are basically villains.
For a second for Book of Revelation. Why don't we talk about...
Wait, can I please talk about this comic? Sure. I haven't got to say anything yet, please.
I didn't Thank know
you.
That.
Yeah.
Titans 30.
So, I don't care what you guys say. The Wendigo Wolverine is my favorite character. This is just... such a fun revelation, and it's nice to see him getting in touch with himself again and eating people, because that's his true passion. But yeah, there was just so many things swooshed together. It was so weird, because like Heather was like, oh no, Wolverine's mind controlled, oh, I can't get through to him at all, and then she cuts off his arm and he's like, Heather? I'm like, what? That's not a normal reaction when someone cuts off your arm. And then he gets thrown off a roof, and then he's totally like just walking down the street. And I'm like, why isn't his arm grown back? I know it's a special sword that can kill him, but that doesn't mean it cannot grow.
No. It's whatever that's. I don't know. I don't like this part of Wolverine continuity, so I've not stored it in my brain. It's like the
Kurosawa. The Masamune?
Murasama sword?
Murasamune?
Yeah. Whatever
I mean,
it
there's a sword that's similar. Silver Samurai had that can kill Wolverine, but I don't think this is the same sword as that.
No, it's the same sword. So okay. If he cuts off his arm, it cannot grow back.
No. All right. Well, it's just such a weird, like, everything had to happen so fast where it was just like, cuts off his arm and he's like, Heather? Oh, hey, what's up? Oh, funny running. I'm like, what? No. And then he's just thrown off a roof, and then he's walking down the street, and I'm just like, wow, this is just...
Yeah. Why don't we move on and talk about Radioactive Spider-Man number 3, written by Joe Kelly, art by Kev Walker. The big thing happening in this series is Aunt May has been corrupted by the X-Virus and turned into a horrific teeth goop monster that is... teeth goop monster that's attacking New York. Everybody is yelling at Spider-Man to do something about it, but he doesn't want to and can't do what needs to be done, despite Miles being really pissed off about him. And man, this title has, A, been so good, but such so a gut good. Punch. And this issue in particular is not a dry eye in the house.
This has been one of the best one, and it's very funny to me that the best series of an X-Men crossover is Joe Kelly's Spider-Man book. And he's writing this at the same time the Amazing Spider-Man book continues. This is just like a weird side quest for him, but it's one of the best books of this crossover. It's so emotional. It's still playing on all the larger themes without getting wrapped around the axle of a bunch of Revelation stuff. And I'm like, maybe Peter Parker belongs with Dr. Cecilia Reyes? Mm-hmm. What are we talking about here?
Kev Walker's art, by the way, there's a panel of Cecilia sobbing and yelling at Spider-Man that is so emotional and so well done. I mean, the rest of it as well, but I was just really struck by that in particular. So, great book. Pete?
Yeah, this is crazy sad. All the Aunt May stuff is heartbreaking as fuck. But the art style is great.
You wanted him to kill her sooner?
I've always wanted that.
Alex has always been like, she's just teeth goop. Get her out of here. That's her mouth, Alex.
I mean, I don't know. Like, we've been reading comic books for a while. When Uncle Ben says, with great power comes great responsibility, he's talking about the responsibility to kill Aunt May, right?
Yeah, he whispered to Pete, kill my wife.
And he never did it. And that's why there's this thing with Spider-Man. I don't know if you guys have noticed it, but he always seems very guilty. I believe it's guilt over not honoring Uncle Ben's dying wish to kill Aunt May.
Famously, Uncle Ben was like, hey, I'm going to be alone in heaven, so if you could hurry up and kill Aunt May, that would be great.
Oh, that's such a nice, positive way to look at it. Because the full quote we know is, with great power comes great responsibility to kill Aunt May.
And he also always famously say, rather be alone in heaven than married in hell.
Wow. Yeah, exactly.
Uncle Ben.
Yeah, the real reason he doesn't want to kill... He doesn't want, wow, he doesn't want to kill Aunt May because Uncle Ben is single in heaven and he is fucking around.
Oh boy. Oh, that's heaven to
you
be.
Would, yeah.
Well, anyway, X-Men.
That's how it works, I think.
X-Men book. I'm going to tell my wife about this later. X-Men Book of Revelation number 3, written by Jed McKay, art by Netho Diaz. This is the one we were starting to encroach on a little bit earlier. Thing here is one of Revelation's choristers is not so innocent. After all, she's actually a Rocky from Mars, and she works for Apocalypse. And has been working against Revelation this whole time, a.k.a. all three issues of the series. But Revelation knew it and needed her to do it to bring the final conflict with Apocalypse on so that Revelation could become a Ego the Living Planet, but for Earth.
Yeah. Like, what? So the whole plan.
It was my plan the whole time. I meant for you to do that.
So yeah, the whole plan is to become one single consciousness. To have Revelation be like, you know what I love? I met this guy, Ego the Living Planet. He seems pretty sick. I want to do that.
I want to do that.
I'm like, what? What are we talking about here? And then the issue ends. I mentioned this before. The confrontation is Revelation versus Apocalypse and Professor X. I'm like, no one likes any of these people right now. Why? What are we rooting for here?
Yeah. Also, like, this little kid almost takes out Revelation. And I was like, yo, this guy's supposed to be a bad and he can't even handle this little kid right now? Like, what is going on?
Very Arya Stark-coded character here. And I did enjoy that stuff in this book. I mean, I like this issue. It's just, it's exposing some of the overarching flaws in the story.
I would actually throw out there that I think we find out the most about Revelation as a character, and I think he is the most interesting in this series, Book of Revelation,
definitely,
based on the way that he is confessing his motivations to this younger character. And that is interesting. I wish we had gotten more of that earlier on and more threaded through a more cohesive story, because the idea of Doug Ramsey being like, how could I possibly be Apocalypse? Let me figure out how to make that work in a way that morally I feel okay with. That's interesting. Like, that is an interesting take on something, but it's getting lost in the sauce of pretty much everything else that's going on, including where he's like, it was a real bummer to turn Warlock into this virus and just kind of tossing off that detail that I'm like, that's a whole issue of a comic book, at least, not a panel. This is crazy.
Don't say tossing off.
It makes this whole event like such a middle point in the plan where he's like, yeah, I got to manage all these annoying people when all I really want to do is make everyone one planet. And I'm like, what? That's a crazy thing to not say and have a bunch of bad versions of a plan before finally getting to this larger plan that is a single consciousness, which I'm like, that's such a, it's such a strange leap. I like the justification that you were highlighting, Alex, where it's like, hey, how can everyone survive, even the weak, when the fittest are the only ones that can survive? It's like, well, if everyone's one, everyone survives. But that's some like philosophy you write down that in practice no one would ever believe, I think.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So like it's hard to fully get on board with it for a character we're meant to think has real emotions.
Also, what we're not talking about is the fact of, like, if you're a living planet, that sucks, because you're like, hey, stop it. Oh, you're destroying me. Hey, don't set that on fire.
Like, no, we would all be the same. We would be like, one, we would just be podcasting all the time.
We already podcast all the time.
Yeah, we're doing it. We're like a tiny, we're like Ego the Living
podcast.
Meteorite.
You lost me at Ego.
Okay.
Great. Well, that's it for the Age of Revelation. Only 2 more weeks to go of that. Exquisite Corpses.
We'll celebrate the new year by ushering in the end.
You know what?
Age of Revelation.
I think after that, we should go back and reread all of the titles and review them again.
Oh, great.
Like how we do Titans 30.
In the new context.
30 times in a row. Exquisite Corpses, number 8 from Image Comics, written by Pornsack, Pichichote, and James Tynion IV. Art by Adam Gorham with Michael Walsh. Some big stuff going down this issue as a bunch of Crazed assassins are trying to destroy each other and an entire town. Meanwhile, back in the control room, they're freaking out because they've lost the camera feeds, which gives one of our characters who lives in the town enough time to find out what is actually going on from a character that, frankly, I thought was going to go to the distance. But even that ends up in surprising fashion, though I think it also tees up what maybe the end game is going to be here, at least for this first series. What did you think about this one?
I love this issue. I think this was like the issue that finally tipped this over into like just a such a winning comic. Like the way that there's just a great speech that's happening here while there's still some other action happening. We're cutting back and forth, but this conversation between our ambulance driving character and our soldier, who's one of the state assassins out here to kill, is so good and so like inspiring. I was definitely like feeling the emotions of it. Even though it's like just a bloody mess in here, it really works. It really got to me and it really made me think, oh wait, this town is going to fucking fight back against these oligarchs who run everything. And I actually believe the first 7 issues of this have been about the bleak dominance these killers are having over these small town average Americans. And this issue, this speech, maybe like, oh man, they're going to kill these people. So like, I was like, this is just when the revenge story has maybe started to turn and I'm here for it.
Yeah. This continues to be really cool. Amazing art, a lot of fun twists and turns.
Wow. All right.
Wow. Do you not like this?
No, I do, but it's just, you know,
too bloody for you.
Yeah. But it is very interesting and unique and cool, and I don't know, just something about it is, I think it's just too bloody.
Too horror. It's funny that you like enough blood, because this character, there's some of these characters are like a ton of Punishers fighting.
Yeah.
So like, that's right over the plate for you, but it's just too much. Your line, there's a very specific line you have.
Apparently, it's weird.
Yeah.
Yuletide, number 3 from Odie Press, written by George Northey, art by Rochelle Aragno. This is the final issue of this title that finds a town fighting against an influx of monsters right out of Christmas myth. Can they beat them? Can they get rid of them? You'll find out in this issue. I have found the series to be a very fun, charming adventure, particularly Rochelle Aragno's art, which, again, yeah. I'm using this word a lot this episode, but it is very cartoony, but it feels like it would be right at home on like as a Netflix movie or something like that, or Cartoon Network. Mm. It's an enjoyable time. I had a good time reading this.
Yes. Yeah, so as you're saying that, I'm thinking like, oh, this has Hilda energy.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. Yes. That's exactly what I was thinking of.
And that's a good energy. I've been watching a lot of Hilda with my kids, and Hilda is such a fun
show. Hilda slaps, dude. It's a great show. Cool cover. All right, go ahead, Justin. Sorry,
I
didn't mean to cut
you. No, that's it. I agree with what Alex was saying, and this has that fun everyday people in a big fantasy situation that works like Hilda.
Yeah, I thought artistically this is really impressive. Family wins, which is great. You know, a little kind of preview to maybe a round with Krampus later, but really love this kind of story and where it ended here. I just think this is a tight package.
Hilda.
Sacrificers, number 18 from Image Comics, written by Rick Remender, art by Andre Lima Arujo. The last couple of issues of this title have been barreling through plot at an insane degree, even for a Rick Remender title, as we have followed our pigeon character, who has been battling back against the gods, teaming up with Saluna, who is the daughter of the sun, who seemed to be buying a drink of the Kool-Aid, almost literally, but actually killed off all the gods. This issue, we jump 30 years into the future to see how well that has turned out. And the answer is not well, knew that because it's a Rick Remender book.
Not always.
It's crazy. Well, most.
Oh, Nate's crazy. One Rick Remender book where things go real well for everybody.
Well, I don't want to pigeonhole him. I think he's such a great writer.
Pigeon.
But,
yeah.
Pigeon.
Luda. Yeah. I mean, first off, the art on this is phenomenal. Just the facial stuff. It's just unbelievable. You can see the pain on people's faces. It's unbelievable. This is sad. This is crazy, but also such a cool idea to be like, oh yeah, you want to start a revolution? Let's fast forward, see how that works out for you. Just really, really smart. Very well done.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that this is the third part of a six-part arc, I'm like, wow. You don't see a 30 years later in the absolute middle of the story.
Yep.
But that's what we're doing here. The art is fantastic. There's a panel when our replacement sun god character, Solanus?
Saluna, yes.
She's like yelling and there's
what, she screams.
She screams, dude. And there's like the sickness is sort of leaking out of her eyes and mouth, Venom style. This is very cool. And I just love like this arc feels, this story has been all about like how abhorrent the idea of sacrificing a child was in the way the society worked back in the day to do that, to feed the gods that kept the order. And now this arc is like, they finally threw off that yoke and were like, that's evil. You deserve to die. They kill them. And now people are being sacrificed because of the lack of order in the world. There's always sacrifice. What do we do in a world where we win the fight and people are sacrificing the same amount or even more? And you see that emotional damage that they're going through, and you are powerless to stop it. When it felt easy to kill the oppressors from before. And that's the kind of complicated shit that Rick Remender loves to dive into. Yeah. And I love to see the way that he lays that very real stuff down and just puts the metaphor on top of it. And it's just this series. I don't know if enough. I feel like not enough people are talking about how great this particular series is in the
It's really impressive.
Yeah.
Star Trek: The Last Starship, number 3 from IDW, written by Colin Kelly and Jackson Lansing, art by Adrian Bonilla. We talked to Kelly and Lansing about this book a couple of weeks back on the live show, so check that out because they broke it all down. In this issue, we've got. Well, there's a lot of stuff going on in Star Trek continuity, including this taking place after the burn, an event that destroyed most of the lithium in the universe. We've got the last starship, the title, that is traveling out there to try to bring hope again, but they've run straight up against the Klingons, who are pissed off about the burn as well. Complicating things quite a bit is a Borg queen named Agnes who has an agenda of her own. Captain Kirk has been resurrected in his young body, and there's a whole crew to deal with at the same time. Even with all of those details, I would argue this is the kind of high-octane blockbuster Star Trek stuff that you are just not getting on TV at all anymore.
No.
And this is an absolute blast that you could hand to anybody. Even with the deep continuity, there are so many bonkers moments in this issue alone. It's just great.
Yeah.
I feel like the TV stuff is going like Next Generation, but like mystical and a little weirder, like trying to aim at prestige TV, less procedural versions of TNG. And it's fine. It's just, it's a little inert, I think, in its execution. But man, does this go the opposite way? This takes like some of the original, like, no, Captain Kirk wants to fight in the dirt with some aliens, really, if you look at it. And it pushes into the high action that the movie relaunch did back in the early aughts, but in a much more true, bigger way. And the comic book form is really allowing them to go to do more all at once than the movies did. So it's both paying homage to the original Star Trek while also driving so barreling forward, like you're saying, Alex, in this great way.
Yeah, I agree with all that. This is great, continues to be great. There's so many cool moments, great kind of battle with that kind of growing weapon stuff that was really badass.
Not to interrupt, but I just wanted to shout out Adrian Bonilla's art. There's two full-page splashes of this issue. One, the one that you mentioned, Pete, where it just has this amazing page flip to a thing with a bat lift that I don't want to totally spoil. And then the last page as well, which is just a shocker, crazy reveal that, like Justin is saying, connects very much to exactly what you would expect from Captain Kirk, but in a fun and surprising way. Sorry, Pete, go ahead.
No. Yeah, you nailed it.
All right. Last but not least, Die Loaded, number two from Image Comics, written by Kieran Gillen, art by Stephanie
Hans. That's how I want to go. Die Loaded, baby. Come on.
Just like the Dreadnoughts, Pete.
And that's what this book is about.
Die Loaded, baby. Come on.
We are back in the deadly RPG world of Die, following some new characters who are legacy characters who've been sucked in there, and they are dealing with all the weirdness that is involved. And that's all I got to say about that.
Yeah, that sums it up.
The first issue of this was really clear, and I think we lauded it for its clarity in terms of breaking down the very complicated premise. We are back in complicated land this issue.
We are back, baby.
I mean, we get, and it's weirdly like touching some very simple ideas. We get like a straight rip of a Frank Frazetta character in this, in the middle, and then like just a mermaid is briefly floating. I was like, I know what that is. But the rest of it is, I'm like, oh, I don't quite know anything that's happening here. I know there's other characters they have to meet up with. They do tell us the rules a couple times, which is helpful. But it's still hard to exactly put my finger on. In the way that Power Fantasy was Kieran Gillen really like laying down a chip on, like, I'm going to change my vibe up a little bit. This comic is like, no. I'm going harder in my density chasing storytelling, but I'm here for it. All will be revealed. It's just this is the complication issue.
Yeah, this is awesome. I really fun last panel. The art is really impressive. Some just breathtaking panel work here. I'm very much excited to kind of be back in this world and excited to see how it's going to kind of up the ante, if you will.
And that is it for this week's show. If you'd like to support this podcast and all the podcasts, we do patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about comics, Apple, Spotify, Android, or the app of your choice. To subscribe, listen, and follow the show, comicbookclublive.com. For this podcast and many more, until next time, we'll see you at the Comic Book Club.
That's Justin Roadhead and Roadhead signing off. If you want to stick around, we will be reviewing Titans 30 right after this. Yeah, speaking of Titans.
Yeah, he took my bit. That's no fun.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US Soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.
For the first time ever in LA, the icons of FC Barcelona and Real Madrid take the pitch at BMO Stadium.
Ronaldinho, pura magia!
Witness Ronaldinho and the FC Barcelona legends live in Los Angeles. Watch the Legend series, FC Barcelona versus Real Madrid, live in LA on February 22nd at BMO Stadium. For tickets and exclusives, go to wearehouseofheroes.com.